Here we are for another episode of the Adelaide Entrepreneur Club. And today with us, we have David Flood, all the way from New Jersey. Is that correct, David?
New York.
New York, right. Donna and I first heard about David from a video on gold.cast, I think it was, on Instagram. And incredible story. So we reached out to David and we were quite amazed that he was happy for us to have a conversation with him. And here we are back today to record a podcast. Just to give you a little bit of insight about David, it's a lot to David, but just a little bit. He is part of the top youth speakers in the US, that would be, and has spoken in 40 states of the US and Canada to over 400,000 students. And some of his recent Facebook videos have received over 100 million views, and I can see why from what happened, what David's been able to do. So first of all, welcome, David. It's just awesome to have you here today.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me back on for a follow-up visit. Yes, it's awesome to be here.
Yes, it is. All the way over there in New York and us all the way over here in Adelaide. I'd be sneered, like I just can't wait to get to New York and I'm almost there.
Yeah, welcome to come.
Cool. So what we'll start with, David, if we just go into a bit about your background, I guess, leading up to the point where, you know, that event happened in your life, which I guess, you know, where things changed from for you.
Sure. So, I mean, you know, I grew up, Stephen, in a dysfunctional house with a dad who was an alcoholic, and, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, you know, kind of destroyed our family. Brothers and sister, all older, left, you know, college, military, marriage, you know, so they all went their separate ways. And I was home with my mom. And then she had to throw my dad out of the house when I was 13 years old because of his drinking. And then I started to, you know, have a problem when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, and watched my dad, because I worked with him, watched him kill himself basically with alcohol and cigars and cigarettes for the time that I worked with him. He was a contractor, a mason, a bricklayer. And I worked with him from the time I was 12 till the time he died when I was 26. And, you know, I saw him, watched him die, and what, you know, what addiction does to a person's body, mind, soul, spirit. And I decided that I, you know, I didn't want to end up like him and already definitely had my own problem, my own addiction. And I was able to stop drinking when I was 26. So I've been sober now for almost 31 years. Wow. Had a family, met a lovely woman from the Philippines, closer to you than me. she happened to be in the United States in 1990. And we got married in 1996 and had a son in 1998 named Justin, who we found out very short after he was 15 or 16 months old, he was diagnosed with autism, which is developmental disability. And that's my father's dysfunction, my alcoholism, and having a child with autism really set me on a path that I couldn't avoid. And there is no turning back from. That's my calling. That's my inspiration to help people in any way that I can who struggle with, who carry, you know, carry burdens. And I like to think I've turned my burdens into gifts that I can go out and share them with people, not dump them on people, but share them with people. So that's been, so I guess there'd be, you know, I'd probably have three turning points in my life. You know, the one of them was the first two were probably mixed together, my father's death and my stopping drinking. So those would be one and 1A. And then two would be my son's diagnosis with autism. And then maybe the next turning point would be my decision to go out to speak, you know, to kids about what it's like to have a disability.
Yeah. So just on that, like the what you shared on those videos that we watched were just quite impactful. And I think the first one we watched was about you were sharing the story about looking on the inside to a group of kids, which was, and it was amazing just seeing the audience so attentive to what you were saying, and that came from that event in the when Justin was playing ice hockey that day and what the young other team did. So maybe if you could share about that, would be just incredible, David.
Hey, I had to develop a talk, you know, when I did it with the help of a middle school principal. You know, we decided we'd give the kids three challenges. And I always was of the mind of, you know, I have a somewhat religious upbringing in the Catholic Church, Christianity. You know, the Christ always said that, you know, it's what's on the inside that counts of man. And, you know, and I've read other people and Neil Donald Walsh and Wayne Dyer and Deepak Chopra and Mother Teresa and St. Francis and older, you know, older and younger and about, you know, how it's important to look at people from the inside out. So that became my first challenge to kids. And the impact of having these three, 10, you know, five, 10 year old boys let my son score a goal, you know, and it was their, you know, it was their, no one prompted them to do that. You know, that thought came from within them, from that. It wasn't the coach. It was them. Those five boys on the other team decided to do it on their own. So something inspired them, you know, a small group consciousness, you know, of five, but there were 10, you know, so one of them could have been selfish and said no. And what they did, and that kind of set me on again, just the way, you know, the point of that story is really not the goal or how Justin was impacted. It's how a witnesser to an act of kindness can go out and share that story with the world and just have the story be the impact. You know, like the boys, most, I guess some of them don't even know I tell the story. One or two of them does. Justin knows. The people who are at the rink that day, I don't know if they know, but it's just that we're always being watched and you never know who's watching you. And we always, you know, one of the things I talk to kids about, Stephen, is that, and you've heard this before, and, you know, and I'm sure your wife, Donna, has heard this before, and many of your listeners have heard this before. If you want to be really humble and reach a high level of your spirituality and a higher level of consciousness, you have to do nice things for people and then don't tell anybody about it. And that's a really high, that's amazing to do something nice and not look for that validation and that, you know, cheering, applause, prizes, rewards. I tell kids, I said, that's amazing if you can do that. I tell kids to do nice things for other people and let people see you doing it because you have no idea the impact that you're having on the witness, you know, which is so, it's so obvious, but you don't do it for trophies and money and accolades and certificates. You don't do it for that. You do it for them. You do it for you and you do it for anybody who's witnessing you, watching you.
So because the people that are listening may not have heard that particular story, do you mind just sharing that story?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So Justin had played hockey. This was 10 years ago, his first season of rec league hockey. The boys were 10 through 12 years old. Justin was a little bit older than them. He did not want to play, Stephen, with special needs kids. He wanted to play with regular kids, the regular boys. He doesn't want to be with the special needs kids. He doesn't want to feel like he has a disability. So the boys he was going to skate with had been skating for 6 and 7 years. Justin had been skating for 6 or 7 months. And he got a tremendous coach named Andrew and his son Kyle, who protected Justin every game. And what I used to do for the entire season of 16 weeks, number one, I had to be in the locker room to dress him up because anyone who plays, I don't know if they play much ice hockey down in Australia and New Zealand, but the dressing for ice hockey is a pain in the neck. You know, it's not like rugby or soccer or football or, you know, or field hockey or lacrosse or cricket or whatever. You know, there's a lot of equipment to put on. So I had to dress him up. So I'd be in the locker room every game, dressing him up. And the coach, Andrew, would come over to me and say, you know, David, we're going to try and get Justin a goal. Maybe we can get him some more ice time this week. And I would say, Andrew, I don't care about Justin scoring a goal. All I care about is that Justin is part of the team. One person on the team, you know, just included in. And I would sit in the bleachers for the entire game. And if any of your listeners know hockey, with about 3 minutes to go in the third period, the last period of the game, I would come down out of the bleachers and walk around the boards to meet the boys as they came off the ice. In the last game of the season, we were losing. It was 8-3, and there was 3 minutes to go in the third period. So I come down out of the bleachers, and I walk past a man who is screaming at my son and screaming at the referee, "That's offsides, it's offsides, it's offsides." My son was offsides. But I said, "Sir, that's my son, and he's a special needs kid. He has autism, and he doesn't know icing or offsides or the rules of the game. He's just skating and trying to have a good time." Father was very apologetic because he knows, you know, that he made a snap judgment and looked at Justin on the outside rather than saying, "Hey, maybe that kid's new." Not that he even knew he had a disability. So I got behind the goal, and there was a face-off towards the end of the game, and Kyle took the puck, passed it to Justin, and Justin skated in, took a soft shot, and it goes off the goalie's pad. And he gets the rebound and he stuffs it in the goal. And you could see by the play on the ice, by the activity on the ice, that they had let Justin do that. They let him score. And when I went over to the bench to thank their coach, and by the way, I hit the glass. Anyone who's been in a hockey rink, there's plexiglass around the rink. So I hit the glass so hard that day that I bent my wedding ring, and it's still bent 10 years later. If you can see that, it's flat. My wedding ring is flat on the bottom. And it fits better now, so I left it that way. It stays on nice and tight.
But needless to say, you're very enthusiastic.
Yes. So so I go over to the opposing team's bench, and I reach up my hand to their coach to say, and I said, "Coach, thank you. That was so nice of you to do that." And he looked straight in my eyes, and he said, "Do not thank me. It was not my idea. Thank my players. It was their idea." And they were 10, 11, and 12 years old. And they decided on their own to let a kid score a goal. No one prompted them. No adult prompted them. They had that in them to do. But what they didn't realize was that small act of kindness would reach Australia, New Zealand, all 50 states, all over the world. My Goalcast video was translated into Arabic and got 2 million views in Morocco and North Africa and part of the Middle East. I was blown away. I woke up one day. Here he comes outside. Justin, I'm on a Zoom call right now. Okay.
Who is that?
This is Steven. This is Justin.
Hey, Justin. Hey, Justin.
Say hi to Steve.
Hey, Steven.
I'm telling the story about
my birthday, Steven.
Your hockey goal, yes. It's coming up.
We saw a good movie yesterday.
We did. I'll tell him about
it. Do you have any, like, kids or no?
He does. He's got eight.
Eight?
He's got eight kids.
Steven's
eight. Well, hey, Steven, tell Justin where you are.
We're in Adelaide, South Australia, Justin.
In Australia.
Oh, so it means eight means like.
Eight is eight. Right. That's how they say eight down there.
Yeah. David speaking. Yeah,
got a chance to meet him. So, you know, the point is that, you know, that story has traveled across the world at 12,000 miles to you. But it, one kind act. Yeah. And I'm just the storyteller. I didn't create the story, but I carried the story. So you can create a story and you can carry a story. So both of them work really well.
That's just never thought of it like that. You know, you're so right. You get told all your life that, you know, if you're going to do a good deed, make sure the good deed goes unnoticed. But yeah, you know, doing a good deed so that others can see it and the impact that has on them, like it had on you, and that follow-on impact has just been incredible. Like, you know, I know myself just watching you tell that story, the impact it had on us, just hearing you share it was just incredible. So what was the path then from, you know, having that experience to then?
Justin was never bullied in school, Steve. But he certainly wasn't included in things.
Yeah.
And so I went and to his principal when he was in seventh grade, I think, and said, the man's name is Tim. I said, "Tim, I'd love to come speak. Can I come speak to your seventh graders? You know, just about what it's like to be the dad of a child with special needs, so they can kind of have a better, you know, understanding of that." And he said, "Sure." And he said, "But if you come to our school, Dave, you're not going to do a hit and run. So in other words, you're not going to come in, speak, and then leave. What I'd like you to do is speak and then visit classrooms to let the kids ask you questions. And they can talk about what's going on in their life. And they can tell you about their brother or sister or cousin who has autism." And it worked out really well. And then I created a program from that where I would go into schools for a full day. And I still do that now. Mm-hmm. Not all the time. Sometimes schools just want to have me come in and speak. But Justin has become, and the story is not about Justin. It's about all of us. It's about inclusion. It's about how do we make more people part of and included in, you know, how do we come together and how do we not let people who are isolated be isolated?
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. And did you ever have any speaking experience before, or this was, you just had to develop all this skill as you went along?
That's a good question. So I had some speaking experience doing some sales trainings, never really using my own words. It was things I was repeating. I've been a lector in my church for 33 years. So for 20 years, 21 years before I became a speaker, 22 years became, I was doing the readings on Sunday in church. So I was involved in that aspect. And I had some experience, Steve, as an MC for an entertainment company. I would do some weddings and bar mitzvahs and, you know, kind of party and corporate events where I got a chance to MC and talk on the microphone. That helped me not that I was ever a shy person, but it would help me be up in front of people. But as far as when you're going to start talking about to kids in a scholastic, in an academic setting, I have to speak at a college on this Thursday in upstate New York. You need to really button yourself up, down, however you want to, be buttoned up on words and appropriate words to use and how you speak and pronunciation and, you know, things like that. And getting some, a little bit of book smarts and people you can quote who are smarter, you know, and been doing it before you, maybe not smarter, but just around before you, that the kids know, cause and you have to give credibility and you have to be the biggest thing. I think, Steve, to be a speaker is not how well you speak. It's how genuine you are.
Yeah.
So in other words, I can't come up and tell you about being kind and then go home and kick my dog and yell at my wife and break a plate. Although I've done all those things, not in that order and, not right before I speak, but you have to be genuine. A great compliment I got, Steve, one time from a principal. I was in a school in, I don't know, it might've been Illinois or pretty far away from my home outside my state. And before the principal introduced me, when he was introducing me, he talked about me being in harmony. So in other words, he said, when I walked into his office, I'd never met him before. He'd only watched my video. He'd never even spoken to me on the phone. But he said, when I walked into the office, he could tell that I was in harmony because he could tell that the person he was shaking hands with was the same person on the video. Right. And that really touched me. It really made me like, thank you. Cause all of us can feel like phonies. It's very common for human nature for us to be, I'm not good enough. I'm a phony because I'm kicking the dog or yelling at my kids or cursing, which I'd never do any of those things on stage. We're all human. And I feel like a phony. It's like, no, you're human. Share your humanness with others. But when this principal said I was in harmony, I was like, wow, no one's ever said that to me. I've never heard anybody describe that way before. I know what the word harmony means, to be in unison, but to be introduced like that was pretty powerful and touching. And I carry that with me, and I will carry that with me forever.
That's such a good point. Like, we're all human. None of us are perfect. So, if we do go off the path for any reason, we just got to get back on the path, not beat ourselves up while we're off the path. It just means it's going to take longer to get back on the path.
Right. And I take no joy, I know some people do, in seeing other human frailties and human failings, because we all do. You pray for those people. Certainly there are people who have to pay for crimes and things like that. But those are character defects. What I learned in recovery, those are character defects amplified. Whether it's murder, violence, something you do to another, stealing, destruction of property. Those are all very, very, things to the, nth degree, to the nth degree.
Yeah. Look, the other video we saw was the point you were getting across was about showing up, which I thought was just, that was just an incredible point to get across as well.
Do you mind?
You're sharing that
story, isn't it? I'll tell that story. So that's even, I think that's even a more powerful story, yeah. Although that video hasn't gotten as many views as the hockey story. The first one always does the best. But I feel then, and that's become kind of my very sticky saying, is showing up for others. So, you know, Justin just came outside. If you viewers stuck with that, he said his birthday is in October on the 26th. And his favorite holiday is Halloween. He loves dressing up. He's an anime kid. You know, anime is Japanese cartoons. And, you know, he loves anything kind of dressing up and fantasy and things like that. So in sixth grade, I don't know how it is in Adelaide or in the rest of Australia. I don't know what grade parents there let their children go out trick-or-treating alone. You have Halloween in Australia, right?
Yeah, we do. That's a very
good Halloween. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Okay. My father used to call it a pagan holiday. You know, it's a pagan holiday because it's all, anyway, that's another story for religion and the Baltimore Catechism. Anyway, so Justin had no one to go trick-or-treating with. And he was staying home that day because there was he didn't want us following him in the car. Yep. And we didn't want him going alone. He wasn't mature enough to go alone when he was 12 years old. So we decided he'd stay home, and he was up in his room, and he had a costume, but he wasn't dressed up. And we were sad that he couldn't go. He didn't want us to follow him in the car, but, you know, no one had invited him. And I was in my living room, and I was getting up and down out of my chair, going back and forth to the front door. And, the fourth or fifth time I got up, Steve, to go to the front door, I opened the door and I give candy out to kids on the stoop. And out of the corner of my eye, I catch at the end of our driveway, I see two boys walking up, you know, to the end of our driveway, and two boys from Justin's school. Their names are Kevin Cryer Hassett and another boy named Cameron Jacobs. And I use their full names no matter where I'm standing in the country because I want to give them full credit. They showed up at the end of our driveway. There was no phone call. There was no text. There was no message. There was no telling us they were coming. And they didn't come to our house for candy. They didn't even come up to the door. They stood at the end of the driveway. And Kevin saw me on the stoop and he yelled out to me. He said, "Mr. Flood, is Justin home? And if he is, can Cameron and I take him out for a couple of hours?" And, you know, of course, immediately I began to cry. And I said, "Yeah, Kevin, give me 10 minutes. Dude, I'll get him ready." And I called up to Justin and I said, "Justin, Kevin and Cameron are here. They want to take you with them." He got dressed and they took him out for 2 hours. And all they did was show up, Steve. Mm. Again, they didn't. Again, similar to the boys in the hockey game. No phone call. There was no text. There was no pre-planning. You know, they're walking by, and I'm sure they just thought, maybe coming up the street, walking by, hey, let's see if Justin has someone to go with. I think it was very spontaneous. That's the sense I got. And they showed up and they took him. And now I tell kids, can you show up? Just show up. For anybody, you know, a new kid in your school, in your neighborhood, someone who doesn't speak the language, someone who's indigenous, someone who's isolated, someone who is, marginalized, you know, anybody, can you show up? And the reason I ask kids to show up is because there will come, you know this, your wife knows this, all your listeners know this, there will come probably over 1,000 days in your life, you know, if you live to be 60 or 70 or 80 years old, when you'll need someone to show up for you. Yeah. And if you've consistently done that throughout your life for others, on those days, someone will show up for you. But only if you've done it for others.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just such a great story to get across. And I could imagine, just watching the video, I can just see how, you know, it's just such a message that everyone needs to hear, and really in particular young kids in school, and that you're out there sharing it, because, you know, without, I guess, people like yourself, how would people get to hear about this message in schools?
Right. There's other speakers who go in and speak. I think I'm a little bit unique. I know a lot of speakers in the industry, and I've heard of a lot of speakers in the industry. But I think my story is a little unique. I know there's other fathers who talk about their sons. They don't talk about addiction and parental addiction. So I think that those things make me unique, but I'm not special. Other people have great stories to tell. There's, you know, you got to learn to be a good storyteller to get that across, because, you know, you can't just, you know, there's, you got to be brief. You can't talk forever. And you can never, you know, it's important, Steve, when you share your story with someone, to not use the audience as therapy, and just dump your story on them to make yourself feel better. What happens a lot with people in addiction is they go out when they're new, you know, when they're sober 30 days, 90 days, a year, 2, 3, 4 years, and they're still using the audience as therapy. And you can't do that. You really have to put some time. And I had to put time between what happened with Justin and him growing up and the difficulties that he went through in school with not being included. You got to put time, because when things are fresh in your mind, you could really just kind of lose yourself emotionally in an audience. So.
Oh, wow. Look, I know we're constrained by time. So what's something from your perspective, like just leaving it open to whatever comes into your mind, like what would you like to, what's at the top of your mind that you'd like to share to an audience, and a message that you would like to get across?
I feel like the thing that I've been working on, Steve, lately is answer the phone. If you're thinking of someone, call them. You know, I think that's a message from the universe. You know, if you're in a store and you sense, like if you see someone needs help, help them. But even if you have an inkling that someone's struggling, ask. No one's going to ever be, well, I mean, maybe nowadays when people are a little bit more offended than usual, but no one's ever really going to be offended by you trying to offer help. Yeah. So my message would be, listen to your gut, because I think we all have this barometer inside. It's called the conscience, but it's a barometer that knows that something needs to be done. It, like, you know, when someone's down, we have this sixth sense, that if you want to call it that, you can call it whatever you want. Your barometer, conscience, sixth sense. But what happens is, especially now, out of fear, we squash it, crush it, and ignore it. And we can go through life like that and live a very happy life. You can live a very happy life. But when you reach out, like you and Donna did, like you said, let's just reach out to this guy and we want to just meet him and talk to him. That's a small act of courage. You know, you weren't going into gunfire or anything like that, or walking into a burning building, but there's a small act of courage. And it does take some courage to speak to someone that you don't know. But I believe in our better natures as human beings, that when we reach out, we have this innate desire to connect with others, and they do with us too. So it's listen to your gut.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Thanks for that, David. We certainly believe that, you know, just reaching out and saying hello to someone's adding value to them, because at least at the first step, you're recognizing them. Just you're recognizing they're there and you're saying hello, whether they respond or not.
Acknowledging.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. I really did appreciate the time that you spent with us today, that we could, you know, share even further your story to as many other people that we possibly can share it with.
I appreciate that, Stephen. Thank you.
And let's keep in touch for sure.
Sure. People, if people need to reach out to me, it's my website is davidjflood.com. And then my Instagram is David Flood Speaks. And you know, you connected with me there, but I consider we're two old guys on Instagram. You know, that's more like the younger people. My Facebook is David J. Flood, Youth Motivational Speaker. So if any of your listeners want to reach out and connect to me and talk about their children, I'd be happy to.
Yep. And I'll put all that information on the podcast site so that it's really readily accessible. And also those links to those gold.cast videos, because they're
that's the most important thing. I'd love for people to watch the videos and get some help out of that.
Awesome. Thank you, David. Very much appreciated.
I'm humbled and grateful, and please say hello to your lovely wife.
Will do. Thank you.
Have a good day, Stephen.